better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live once again, episode 3545 of the Survival Podcast. This is a Wednesday. It's one of my favorite days of the week because it's interview day and I get to interview people and learn things I don't already know, or I get to explore what people are doing with the information we put out, or like today, I get to do both. I get to learn from someone's experience, but that experience might have actually begun right here at TSPC. That is the case today for our guest, Heather Smith, who is raising quail the natural way. That means they get to touch grass. They get to be on the ground. But the really cool part is, you know where she's doing it? Right in the middle of a Karen-based HOA. How do I know it's a Karen-based HOA? Because all HOAs are based on Karenism. Karens and Kyles run HOAs. It's people that don't have enough government in their life and want just a little bit more government, and yet you still can, if you're stuck there, produce your own food. Heather is raising quail for food and eggs. She's actually building a little farm operation at the same time, and we'll expand from there in just a minute when I bring her on. Before we do that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is USABurkeyFilters.com. That's where you can do business with Jeff, the Berkey Guy Gleason. He's been working with us for, well, over a decade now on TSP. That's a crazy amount of time in the world of podcasting. He's a really good dude. He will take care of any customer service issues that might come up, because I was literally on a panel with Jeff at a speaking engagement one time. In the middle of the panel, he was answering a customer service thing. Like, hold on a second. Like, he's just that kind of guy. And he is one of the top dealers for Berkey in the world. That means he can get things done others can't. Don't buy your Berkey or your Berkey parts from people who just started working with Berkey yesterday at a gun show. Get the original Jeff the Berkey. You got Gleason on your side. Next up today is Anton's Land of Biltong, man. I'll tell you, I don't get to be mean like I was last week. Last week, I literally ate Biltong in front of our guest. And even though I like Heather, I would do it to her too. I'm just out. Last week's when my shipment came in, and I got to wait till next week before the next, and it never makes it 2 weeks for me. And I get 2 pounds of Biltong and sausages every 2 weeks, and I still go through it. Yeah, I never make it through the next weekend, basically, because it's just that good. If you want to experience real, authentic Biltong for yourself, get over to landofbiltong.com. And if you are an MSB member, remember, this is one of our supporting vendors, not just a sponsor. That means you get a discount of 10% off everything at landofbiltong.com. And I'll tell you what, Anton's been sending me some different little things with my orders, including like this really awesome sea salt and stuff like that. So he's got more than just the Biltong. That's just what he's hanging his hat on. With that, let's go ahead and bring our special guest on the air right now, Heather Smith, and we're going to be talking about raising quail to get to touch grass. So, yeah. Hey, Heather, welcome to the show.
No, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to share about our adventures in quailing.
Awesome, awesome. I've never heard of quailing before, but that makes sense. That's a bona fide term. Let's go back before you touched a quail. Let's go back before you were doing any of this kind of like small-scale homesteading or small property homesteading, I should say. And you're just doing whatever it is you're doing professionally. Your educational background is whatever it is. What were you doing before you got into any of this, and how did you find your way into it?
I was just going about my job. I'm a police officer in the Portland, Oregon metro area, so another exciting place to be. Hmm. And one of my lieutenants told me about a book, and it was a book that one of your listeners actually wrote. The 299 Days series, and they talked about your podcast. And so I'm like, oh, this is probably just a pod, you know, something that they made up for the book, but it was a real thing. So I started listening to you, and that's how all of this mess started.
So, yeah, for those that don't know, Glenn Tate was actually one of the moderators on our original forums back in like 08, 09. He wrote a book series called 299 Days. And in like the first book, the main character hears this crazy podcaster who changes his whole trajectory, which benefits him when everything falls apart. And it's me. And there's plenty of people with Heather's story that they read that and they looked it up because they didn't believe it, because you didn't believe it was real, right? Like, this can't be real.
It was such a like specific name podcast for the book.
Yeah.
What's this guy trying to do? Survive. So he's listening to the survival podcast. Oh, gee, here it is.
So you discover our community and our kind of larger body of work, and you end up eventually deciding you're going to keep quail. How did that happen, and how did you decide to put quail into a more natural environment versus stacks? I've done both, and I have to say it's a little bit easier to do a normal kind of quail colony, a stack system that's designed for it. But I think you get a happier animal and better results doing it the way you're doing it. What made you choose that?
I guess the first part was, you know, we wanted to make sure that it was a learning experience. We have two kids. We have a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old. Well, I guess he's 7 months now. And so we really wanted it to be something really physical that they could see and touch. The other part is we did want them to be happier. And, you know, you talk a lot about your koi and your fish. Having them in their little aviary is almost like washing a little fish pond, just watching them go about their days and looking for their bugs. It's super calming. I had to be home. They send you home when you're pregnant if you're a police officer. So I would just be sitting in the back garden. I would have their hutch open, and I'd just be writing my reports and writing warrants and watching them do their little quail stuff. And it was super relaxing. So we definitely wanted to have them in kind of a more comfortable environment. We talked to a lot of people that had them in cages, and it also looked really dirty, I think was the other part that was a bit of a turnoff for us, which I know sounds really silly, but I want things to be like pretty and nice. And
no, I get it. And that is one thing that's true, is when you do quail in a stack, it's a lot of waste, and it's not the most fun waste to get rid of. I've had to deal with worse things, but it's not great.
No, and one of the ways that we deal with waste is we do a deep litter method. So I only clean out their pen, gosh, maybe 3 or 4 times a year. And so what I end up doing is I just keep on adding dry bedding. So we have a big green space right behind us in our little HOA community, and they cut the grass every 4 years back there. And so I go out there. You're not supposed to. It's a protected waterway. But I go with my rake, and I rake up all the grass and save it, and I throw it in there. And then when I go collect their eggs, I just rake it up, and they get to take all their dust baths, and they are just happy as clams.
So you're using kind of an aviary thing, not a tractor. How have you managed to do that in an HOA with people that look over fences and get involved in things they don't need to worry about?
You know, one of the things that we were really lucky about is we were able to buy the last house in the HOA that no one else wanted, because it was not next to everybody else's houses. So it's the smallest house on the smallest piece of property. And it has this big side yard and this little sliver in the back, but it backs up to the green space. And then on the other side is like the waterway catchment area. So we don't have any direct neighbors, which is super nice. And the other reason we chose quail is because they're super quiet. And no one knows what a quail sounds like. So it just sounds like a bird, like you said.
So when the rooster goes, it's a mockingbird as far as these people know.
And, you know, I've selected the quieter roosters.
Okay.
So I guess the dog has helped me select the quieter rooster. So that's also been super nice. We also have our aviary really short.
Yeah.
Pretty small spot. So it's probably only, it's in kind of a trapezoid, but if you're going to do the trapezoid, it's going to be like a 6x6 area.
Gotcha.
So it's still pretty contained, which is really nice. And it's in this kind of fenced off garden area that we call a catio.
Okay.
So people think that we just have our cats back there, and they don't have a cat or a garden there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I would say even if they figured out you had quail eventually, I have pets, right? And I have pets. You don't want to kill my pets, do you?
Yeah,
horrible, Karen. Please go back to where you came from. Don't kill my baby birds.
Right. Well, it's super nice to have the 3-year-old, too, because you're all like, you're going to make my 3-year-old cry, like, which the HOA doesn't have a problem with, but that's a whole other story. But
You know, when I first got into this, I always try to do the weird shit or the cutting edge or whatever. And I heard about these Texas A&M quail. They're basically Courtenay quail, but they're white.
Right.
And I bought a bunch of them, and I brought them home, and they're supposed to get bigger and make bigger eggs and all. They don't, by the way. Nobody should ever get them just because they think, if you like white, you like white. That's fine. That's about it. And after I got them home, I went back to the guy I bought them from, and I'm like, you know, the brown ones are easy. You can look at the breast and male and female, roo and hen. I said, how can I tell which is which? And he goes, do you drink beer? And I went, on occasion, yeah. He goes, get yourself a beer, go sit out there and watch them in their cages. And whenever one goes off with this little roo crow, grab them and band them. So then I got all brown quail.
Yes.
I was like, okay, I'm going to eat all of you, and I'm going to bring in the brown ones because it's just easier to manage. But they do have that kind of noise they make. I'm not going to embarrass myself trying to do it again, but actually, I think I did pretty good. That is about what they sound like. But they don't really tip off a neighbor that something's going – like, they don't sound like a rooster. Mm-hmm. Like, when you hear a rooster bust off, like, five-year-olds know what that is. Yeah. Where these are just kind of under the radar, aren't they?
No, they have been super quiet. And we'll be over on the other side of the green space. And we can hear them on the other side of the area. But we have so many birds and – other animals around here that you can't really tell, and especially yeah. People aren't listening for it. It hasn't come up, so we've been really grateful for that.
Anyone can golf says I did a good roo. Well, if I did, I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to retire as the grand champion of quail impersonators. When you set this aviary up initially, did you have any things like that were struggles, or like if I did it again, I would have went right past that, or I would do it differently?
If I was going to do it again, I wouldn't have as many quail get eaten by rats. That's what I would change.
Okay. Okay. So,
at least the way our garden is set up is it was supposed to fit in like this little triangle. There we go. Triangle. Yes. Yeah. And so what I did is I'm like, well, I'll just get some chicken wire and I'll bury it deep, you know, just to make sure that, you know, nothing gets in. Well, you know, it's not so much about the quail getting out. It's about things getting in.
Yes.
And we
actually
lost the first 10 to rats.
Were they still able to go under?
Through the chicken wire.
They ate through it.
They would go through it. They would just stream their little...
Oh, I got you. You say chicken wire.
Yeah, chicken wire.
You mean chicken wire. That's why when I built mine, I used the half-inch hardware cloth.
I got to that as well. And so yeah. We'd come out, and they would just be dismembered because God dang rats would be pulling them through the chicken wire. And it was horrible. So it was one of those things where you get a beer and you just pretty much wait outside to see how they were going to get through. So we ended up totally taking it apart and doing the hardware wire. And for anyone that hasn't worked with hardware wire, it's horrible. Spend the money, get the big shears to cut through it, and then dig it down super deep.
You think
enough, it's not. Get rocks, pack the rocks down, then pack the sand, then pack the gravel so that they can't dig underneath it. And then
I would say add to it, like when you come down, put a break of about, a break is a bend for those that don't know, of about 8 to 10 inches laterally out horizontally. So you come down in the ground, let's say 8-10 inches, and you go out another, like, yes, you're going to use more, but what's going to happen then is when they go to dig that, it's going to tear them up. Another thing I've seen done where people have really bad problems with it is for the horizontal portion under the ground, right where it kind of meets the depth of the wire, instead of doing a break, they just use the hardware cloth and they take that diamond lath stuff that you get in like hardware stores and all. It's almost like a cheese grater.
Awesome.
It's really sharp. It's for like reinforcing concrete and stuff like that. And they'll put like a strip of that a foot out all the way around an aviary or a chicken house or whatever, and anything, I mean, I don't care if it's a dog, a coyote, a raccoon, a rat that starts digging that, it will just shred their paws. So that generally puts a stop to it. That's interesting that you had a rat problem. I went right to the hardware cloth. I was less worried about rats, but thinking back, I probably should have been.
Mm-hmm.
I was worried about snakes here.
Oh.
We have Texas rat snakes every year. I pull 30, 40 out of the coop. Because they go in there and eat the eggs. And, you know, if they can get through pretty small hole, and they'll just wipe out a whole colony. Like, they just, That's yummy, right? Little birds, they love little birds.
Everything loves to eat quails. I think that's the other thing that we've really been worried about is I didn't know how much they were going to fly, because some of them love to fly, and I love to get rid of those ones. And you know, we have these great rainstorms, obviously, being in the Northwest, so, you know, it's just wind and rain, and I didn't think about it, but it popped the top of our hutch off.
Okay.
So all of our quail flew out or got blown out, and I'm just like, well, there goes. So the first set was eaten by rats. The second set got blown away in a storm. Nearly every single one of those stupid quail came back.
Really?
Which I didn't know. And so we've had that happen a few times where a quail will fly out, and I'll be like, okay, like, bye. Like.
No, they do come back.
Yeah, I'll just make more of you. They end up coming back a lot of the time. And that's something I didn't know and has been really nice.
I think we could handle quail.
Yeah.
The way we handled chickens with, like, free range comeback, they could be, I think that could, is doable. I just think they're all going to die.
Right.
And it's not because they don't know what to do. Like, people have this mythology around quail I find crazy, like, that they couldn't be trained that way, whatever. But basically what you have is a chicken that never gets bigger than your fist for its whole life that everything wants to eat. Because, I mean, I've got, the chickens I got now are Jersey Giants. They're, like, small turkey size. So the Cooper's Hawks come over and they're like, no. I'm not doing that. That thing might beat my ass. Where that quail, they can just grab it and they're gone. Or the dog can run out or the coyote or whatever. And I think the only reason we really need to imprison them at all is because otherwise they're dead. Because I had one get out of my aviary. I still don't know how. And my dog, Charlie, he's my buddy and me were back there drinking some beers and just hanging out. And he's got his nose down in the deep grass and he's kind of moving along back toward the aviary. We're finally like, what is that dog doing? And he had his nose up against this thing's butt, and he was, like, shoving him back to where he knew he was supposed to be. But he never left. He was just like, oh, this is cool. Look, I got all kinds of stuff to eat now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're not this fragile, weird. Like, have you ever heard this one? The reason we don't put them in aviaries and we make the cages so low is they'll fly and break their necks. Let me guess. You've never had a quail do that, have you?
I have never had a quail do that. I mean, they will kill themselves in other ways. But
yes. They will. They'll do it.
Break their necks. Yeah, they, I also didn't know that they were so mean if they're so unhappy. I think that's bad. If it's not the rats, that's how we've had our other deaths.
They'll attack each other.
Yes, 100%. But they are super hardy, and so they'll heal really well.
Yeah.
And that's, I didn't know. I thought, you know, if as soon as one is, you know, hurt, I'm like, well, you know, it's like a horse. Let's just get rid of it. But, you know, a little neosporin goes a long ways.
Yeah, I found having kept them both ways, there's less quail-on-quail violence in an aviary than a rack system, because if you put, like, one male and four females in a 2x2 cage, and there's some conflict develops, and it's usually female-on-male violence with them in that situation anyway, there's nowhere to break off to. There's nowhere for that violence to be diffused. And the bigger the aviary they have, well, I can just go over here and I'll leave this one over there. And it's like if you put kids in a small room, there's a lot more conflict than a big room with a bunch of toys where everybody can have their own spot.
You know, and then we do the quail per square foot, even in the aviary. And at least what we found to work with that is that if you kind of make little rooms, and I know that sounds silly, but like, you know, if you have a good tree stump, that's kind of little, but you're impressed that you pulled it out, you know, stick it in there because that's something that they have to go around.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go around enough, somebody loses interest, like in a bucket.
Yeah.
Whales love buckets.
You know, you compared it to fish and I never really thought about it, but that's exactly the same as fish. The more structure you give, the more, when they get territorial, I got my own little space.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to kick anybody's ass who comes in here, but I can't see the other guy.
Right.
So he's right here and you're right there, but everybody's okay with each other because they can't see each other. But when they see each other, then we're gonna butt heads.
The other thing that has really helped, and I know this sounds really silly, but it's like giving them something to do. So we always make sure, you know, whenever I'm around, I'm, you know, I like dandelions. You know, I get the creek dandelions. I'm that person. You know, I'll go around and I'll pull out all their heads or I'll pull out the greens but not the root and I'll throw it in there. So it gives them something to kind of chew on, to move around on. I know this sounds silly, but just getting one of the, like, spades, the one that has the triangle, and just brushing everything up so that they're at the bottom, it gives them something to dig at, something to do, so that they're not just looking for trouble.
Well, I can't think of the word for it now, but I mean, like, zookeepers do this with animals all the time, and there's like a word for it where they
engagement.
What's it called?
Engagement.
Yeah, there's another word though, but that's what it is. But yeah, there's like an industry term for it. It's like entertainment for animals, where they'll give, you know, the bears a bunch of tied together towels in a barrel or something, so they have something to do, because otherwise they get bored, and when they get bored, well, maybe I'll pick on him.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've been to grade school, where'd she go? If you've been to grade school, you know how that happens. Kids get bored, they pick on the weaker kid. That's just how things go, unfortunately. But yeah, if you give them, God, I can't think of, and it's going to bother me now, and it'll be like, we'll get past this. We'll be at the end of the interview. I'll be like, it's called this. But yeah, there is a thing that they do with animals, and I think it's good for us to kind of emulate that when we put them in a captive situation, to give them something to occupy their brains. Even though it's a little bird brain, it's still a brain.
Yeah. No, and they are, I think that's the other thing is, you know, I always saw the chickens, and it was always so nice to see, you know, even with you, where you know, the chicken that'll sit on your, like, shoulder or will be around you. The quail are a lot more cautious and not super friendly. I think we have one that is friendly, but that's because it's had its eyes pecked out, so it can't reach anybody. But it'll let you pet it. It'll, like, sit on your lap. The kids will hold it. So I think that's the other thing I didn't know about quail, is they aren't super friendly.
No, they're not. They're not super friendly with people either. I think they could be, but I think it's most birds are this way. And you almost have to do a mean thing to make them your friend, and that is keep them away from other birds.
Oh, okay.
Like, anybody that keeps parrots will tell you, if you get two parrots, this whole parrot that sits on your shoulder and nibbles your ear and cuddles you like a cat, it goes away because now they have another bird.
Oh, okay.
And birds are just, they're flock animals, mm-hmm. right? They like to be in groups. They don't want to be alone. We've sold a lot of ducks to people who will call us up, and I got one duck, and I'm like, yeah, that's about it. And they're like, yeah, I know. And like, well, how do you know? Well, I had five ducks and I lost four of them, and now I got one duck and it follows me around like a dog and it's miserable.
Oh.
And we've literally, like, sold them a surplus drake just so they had, you know, another animal to be with. Because if you don't give a bird other animals, then you have to do the other animal's job. You know, you have to be there for them. How did you get started with your sourcing? Like, did you do eggs or chicks, and where'd you find them? And after doing whatever you did, how would you recommend people get started as far as stock?
You know, we got our chicks, we had to special order them from Wilco, just down the road. And that was the first group that all got eight. And then after all of them got eight, I was too embarrassed to go back. So I went to Craigslist and I found someone that was raising them in hutches and was able to get some more. And then only half of them got eight.
Okay.
And then I got some more, and then that's when we started to have our brood. And then I've actually been able to go onto Craigslist and, like, Facebook, and a lot of people will give away quail.
Okay.
So, and all of the people that have given away the quail have been from the hutches. So it's been really fun to, like, get their little bullied quail, because they don't want to kill them for whatever reason. Which, not whatever reason. I know it's hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, then being able to, honestly... you know, being able to take these little aviary quail and throw them on the ground.
Yeah.
They are it is the cutest cutie thing.
Because they're like, holy crap. I've seen that. I've moved them from one space to the other. And I would go that direction. I don't know. Like, I think I would do the whole you're going in the freezer thing before I would go take a bird that's experienced that much space.
Yeah.
And put them back in a cage.
Yeah, 100%. And at least now we just started doing our own eggs, which has been really fun. And so
you mean hatching and brooding?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Which has been really great. And then this is going to sound really silly. We just did our first little brood a little while ago. I didn't know that the eggs shook day before.
Yeah.
That is the most fun.
When they start seeing it move.
Looking at this little circle and waiting for the eggs to, like, do their little shake. So if anyone needs, like, something to do for their children, just put them on egg shake duty.
Okay, so they can watch.
We got all the neighborhood kids. It was really fun.
I came up with this brilliant idea that wasn't brilliant after all, and I think it's good to share what didn't work. I thought, I'll get some little Bantam Buff Orpington chickens. I'll put them in the aviary. They can live with the quail. That worked. All of a sudden, there's not many eggs anymore. And I thought the quail were just, like, going through a downturn. So I brought some eggs from my buddy in. We put them under one of the little nesting boxes where one of the little hens had started to go broody, and we figured the bantam chicken would raise the baby quail, and we wouldn't have to incubate and brood. And so we walked around, we went back, we lifted the box up, no chicken, no eggs, 10 minutes. She ate them all. And this was not a chicken. It was like you'd find bantam eggs in there. They weren't eating their own eggs. They were only eating the quail eggs. And I think what happens and what throws this off, unless you get a chicken not predisposed to it to do it, I never tried silkies. Maybe they would be less likely to do it. You know, quail eggs are mottled. They're spotted.
Yeah.
And a chicken that sees some, it doesn't understand. It doesn't have fingers and hands. It uses a beak to figure stuff out. So it sees, what's that on there? I think I'll peck that off. And it breaks open and, oh, candy. And then like, you know, it's not mine, right? So I might as well eat it because chickens do like to eat eggs once they're broken. That did not work. So I think it's good. Like you're sharing some of the things that caused you to lose the whole first batch, half a second batch. You know, I've had these failures too, and I think that a lot of people are so worried about failure they don't get started. I think a good lesson here is we both had failures. It wasn't that big a deal, and we just kept going, and we figured it out. Because I'm imagining things are going much smoother for you now.
Yeah, it's been really great. And, you know, the thing that we've gotten really good at is transitioning the new quail into the quail brood that's already established. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we first did it, it would just be like this little, like, quail melee, and it was like, oh my gosh, you're like trying to grab quail so that they stop pecking each other.
Yeah. And
now the best way for us is that we get a bunch of new grass, and then we put it down, and then we rake it up, and then some more new grass in there so that the smell is kind of diluted, and then we put the new quail in at night because they all have to bed down at night, and so that way everybody kind of wakes up together. And we had so many less problems that way, instead of just kind of like trying to like have the little brooder next to it so that they can all look at each other. Cause then they end up just kind of like evil eyeing each other and getting ready to be like, hey, when you get out, I'm coming for you. It's not nice to do it at night so that they can all wake up together. And we, at least with this one, we haven't had any troubles.
I've done that with chickens too. I think it's the bird brain is just, it's a bird brain. It's not that advanced. And when they wake up together, I think the sentiment is kind of like, I guess you were always here.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think when you introduce them in the middle of the day when everybody's awake, then they form an imprint, and I remember that you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get targeted, because I've had that with chickens where they get like, this one bird's being targeted by everybody else.
Yeah, and that's what happened to our, which is such a drag because it's one of our prettier ones. Like, you don't get a lot of red ones. So, like, there's, you know, you get a lot of, like, the browns, but, you know, every now and then you get, like, a white one that has a little bit of brown on its head, or you get like a red one and you're like, oh, this is going to be great. And those seem to be the ones that always get bullied.
Yeah. You're different. I got to do something about the fact that you're different. One of my buddies who used to breed these before he passed, he started getting some that were like golden.
Oh.
And they, if you had a male and female, they threw true. They would make more babies that looked like them.
Yeah.
And another one of my friends got some from him. I don't know if he's still raising them or not, but they was like, just a weird genetic mutation that came out of his line and was able to be propagated forward. But he said the same thing. He had to move them away, especially when they were a little younger and a little smaller from the older ones. Because, and I think animals in general have this whole kind of thing, like when something's not the same, it's dangerous. It's different. It has to go. Like, I think the reason dogs hate mailmen is because they wear a uniform and they look different than everybody else. Mm-hmm. Like that's not right. And I think there's a lot of that. And that's part of livestock husbandry, is recognizing what's happening and figure out how to mitigate it.
Yeah. And then that's been kind of the fun part about it. You know, that's the fun part of gardening. Like, you know, I started, you know, you start your seeds in the winter. And like, as soon as you start your seeds, you're like, this is how I'm going to do it different next year. You're like, I'm already starting next year. Like, that's how I feel about doing these little quail things. So as far as next year, you know, I'm going to start incubating earlier because we have selling eggs, which has been really fun because we actually just sold our first to people that wanted to start their own quail, which has been really exciting. And so the idea is that, you know, at least what I'm trying to do is, hey, if you're starting quail, I'll sell you the first dozen, but then I'll give you another dozen. So maybe you start doing yours, you can give me a dozen eggs. Because I don't know if it's a big deal, but I'm a little worried about inbreeding. People have told me that's not a big deal. But I think the issue that I have right now is now I have babies in with their moms and dads.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I'm going to start getting some funny looking ones.
You might. You might. So,
we'll see how that goes.
Birds are way more forgiving than a lot of animals with that. But I always think it's good to bring in some new genetics.
Yeah. So that's at least the goal for this year. I'll bring in any roos that anybody's going to get rid of. And I'll just trade out roo for roo. And then I think next year I'll try to incubate other people's eggs. So that we can start to get things a little separate. And we were talking about things that are a hard time. Raising quail on the ground, it is always kind of a challenge to find the eggs because they are speckled.
Yeah.
And so they do blend in really well. But I found that they like to lay in certain places. So if you have little landscapes in there, like if you have your stump or you have your basket, they want to lay like underneath it or right around it. And then they don't bury them. And if they bury them, it's like super little. So while you're raking, you usually find them. And if you have a toddler and you have an aviary, you just send your toddler in to go grab it. So it's good. It's about like the pigs. If you can't do the pig's job, you have to find someone to do the pig's job.
Do the pig's job. Yeah, I found one of the things they really like. I don't even know what they're called, but they're the bins that you get. They're like $10 plastic at like Home Depot and Lowe's. And they're designed to like sit on a shelf and they have a kind of an open front.
Oh.
And you turn them upside down and they make like a little hut with an open door.
Oh, we use those in the winter.
Yeah, and you use those, you can stack them and put stuff in your shop or whatever, like to separate fittings or whatever. They love those things, and they lay like crazy inside of them. That was something I found, that this idea that they just lay wherever, I think you're back to, well, is it in a cage where it's 2 foot by 2 foot?
Yeah.
You probably do lay wherever. You know, I've seen ducks run across the ground and an egg fly out of their ass while they're walking. But they still tend to lay in a spot. I think most birds. We even had one quail that kind of went broody, but she didn't stay there. And I was like, man, if I could breed out some broody quail, man, then this is just easy. It's an easy bun if you could do it. And I think it could be done. I quit doing it because Dorothy wouldn't eat the damn things.
Yeah.
And I'm not raising meat for one person. I'm just not going to do that. It was unfortunate because they were easy, really. Like you say, they're a little harder in an aviary. I think they're harder, but I still feel like, overall, once you get set up in a routine, they're easy.
Yeah, we have our little routine. You know, we I'm on the street in front of our house. And you know, we have our little routine, and it takes so little work because you know we were thinking about having like the big tank of water, so you know you don't really have to check their water except for once a week, or you don't have to you know feed them except for once a week. I really like being able to go out there every day. Cause you know, you can leave their eggs in there for 4 or 5 days. They're fine. But being able to go out there and actually kind of like touch the grass and look at what they're doing has been really nice for us. It takes maybe like 15 minutes. So they're super low maintenance, which is really nice. And another thing I really like about them, but I would love to have a broody hen. I see people who have it on Facebook and I just look at them. And I'm like, you shouldn't share that. You're just going to make everyone jealous. That's all I want.
So real quick for people here, I'm going to show this. This is the product I'm talking about. And if you're on the audio, 33 minutes, 20 seconds in is where you'll find it. And somebody said they're called parts bins, and they actually call them a bin one compartment, medium, heavy duty. But parts bin will find it for you on Lowe's if you're interested. Anyway, let's keep going here. When you mentioned gardening and all, how are you kind of function stacking the quail into what you're doing with other elements in your homestead?
You know, it's we actually started composting with your basic composting plan where you have the bucket, just the garbage can. And that's how we started composting. And then we started vermicomposting from your vermicomposting. So we kind of have a system now where, you know, if it's anything that the quail will eat, it goes in one bucket. If it's something that they won't eat, it goes in the vermicompost bucket. And then if it's nothing that the worms will eat, it goes in the big old trash bucket. We call it the jack bucket. So,
okay.
relations. So, you know, that's how we've started doing anything. But it's been really nice because we have a way to have these three different sources of compost that mature at different rates. That's been really nice. So we have this, like, these huge pieces of compost for the quail because we just consider that, you know, our own compost. So we did a whole big strawberry and asparagus patch. And the whole bottom of it was just from all of the trimmings and all of the compost that the quail made over 4 months. And how much money does that save us for, you know, probably, gosh, I would say it was at least 2 yards. Because it was deep. It was probably 3 feet deep. It was getting pretty close up to the top. So
yeah. That was nice. Yeah.
So that's at least how we have done it. Obviously, the eggs have been super nice. And I know that doesn't go quite to gardening, but it goes to this whole idea of having your property make money.
Yes. Or
lose you as much money as it should.
Yeah.
That's been really nice. Having the meat has been super nice because, you know, we start out with, you know, 30 and then it just kind of dwindles and dwindles and dwindles as it goes on. But I think next year we're going to start having a constant amount and start throwing more in the freezer has been really nice. And then obviously the compost and I'm going to get this written by somebody and putting up in the garden. If we eat it, smoke it or sell it, it's not coming on our property.
I think I know where you got that from, because I know where I got it from.
For your guests, and I think it was...
It was my uncle. That was my uncle said that. He said, if I can't eat it, sell it, or smoke it, I'm going to kill it.
I love it, and we do that all... I'm going to have that put everywhere. You should have a shirt. I love it. That makes me laugh every time, and that's how I look at my house now. I'm like, if we can't do one of those three things, I'm not interested.
Tom, if you're in the audience right now, that's a shirt idea. I'll just say that it is a shirt idea. How many are you taking for meat a year? It sounds like you're not really spending a lot of meat out of this yet. And have you considered maybe that, like, when you brood a quail, you're looking at brooding of about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They're big enough to slaughter at 6.
Mm-hmm.
And your aviary is only so big. I would say if you wanted to up your meat production, one of the things I would consider is building a couple kind of light duty quail tractors.
Yeah.
And growing out your meat birds beyond your culls. Because culls are a different thing. But because at about 6 to 7 weeks, you can process a quail with your bare hands in about 30 seconds. You don't even need a pair of shears. They're kind of ideal at that size, other than if you want more quail.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if maybe that would be a path forward where you could stay on the ground with them. Because I wouldn't want to do it long-term with tractoring. I'd much prefer long-term my main flock. But 3 weeks isn't that long for a couple meat runs a year.
Yeah, and at least and it's one of those things where this has kind of been our big egg year. And we've had to change from trying to make everything perfect and waiting to do something till you can do it perfect to just, we'll just try it out. I think it's the, not Keith Olbermann, but his kind of foil where he's like, you know what, screw it, we'll do it live kind of thing. Our plan next year is to start incubating as soon as we can have them outside and it's warm enough that they won't die. And then we're pretty much just going to keep the girls and probably sell them off. And then every boy is just going to be in the freezer for food.
Okay.
So it's either going to be dog food because the dogs love the feet.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's going to be for us and just throw it on the smoker. I'm just going to smoke a bunch of them and they're just going to get shredded for meat.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never understood why my wife wouldn't eat them. I'm like, if you eat chicken, you would eat quail. Guilty pleasures, I like to watch cooking shows.
Yeah.
And whenever quail are part of a cooking show, it has a little bit of a gamey taste. I'm like, stop using words you don't know, right? Like, no, this is what the hell is gamey's not a flavor. There's no such thing as gamey. And what you mean by it is not what a quail tastes like. A quail tastes like chicken. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe all the meat tastes a little more toward the dark meat side of a chicken, I guess, would be a way to look at it. But they taste, maybe it's not exactly the same. I'm just saying a person that would eat chicken happily should be happy to eat quail.
I'd say it has like a little more greasy texture to it, not in a bad way.
Yeah.
And so it's something that I like, and I think it's good. But we've mainly been eating our culls. And maybe I don't know the difference between coals and meat birds.
Yeah.
But I've just been saying coal for any bird that I don't want in the aviary.
So, yes, which means there can be a difference or not. So a coal is any bird you just decide doesn't need to be here no more.
Yeah.
Which also can be your females when they get old. And you want new, younger, more productive layers. And what a lot of people do with that is you raise those females. They start laying at about 18 months. They'll experience their first molt. You can track that on a calendar. So you make sure you hatch a batch, let's say 8 weeks before the molt begins. And then by the time you're ready to cull every old bird, your new females, you've been able to pick out males and females and ratios, and now you're culling your old birds.
Yeah.
So usually when people say cull, they're talking about that.
Okay.
And meat is all, like, the cull overlap is, well, sorry guys, I need two males and there's 70 y'all, so guess what? So those are young. And the biggest difference is, You wouldn't think a little bird like a quail would get tough, but an older bird is kind of tough. Like, when you go to do everything manually, you end up breaking the shears out, to me. That to me, this is my definition, nobody else's, I guess. If I'm using shears to do processing on a quail, it's cull. And if I'm doing it with my bare hands, it's a young bird. It's perfect for meat, I guess. And I guess maybe split a hair there, but that's what I mean when I say it.
Okay, no, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, we do lights on our quail during the winter just so we have consistent eggs.
Yeah.
Just because this is what we use primarily for our eggs. So we are getting ready to kind of transition our older birds out, which is sad because, you know, they're the ones that survived.
Yeah.
So you're kind of a little attached to them. I think that's one of the other issues that we've run into is that quail might be super hardy physically. They're great during freezes. Like, we didn't have any issue other than the water freezing, but they are really sensitive emotionally. And that's where we've also lost them, is if there's a big change, they can get overstressed and then they'll die. Like, if you are moving them all out to clean out their beds, what I learned is that you have to do it while, you know, it's like super overcast or like at the end of the day, because they'll get super stressed out and then they will barf and die, which has been super weird. Or the cat was sitting on top of it and it's
freaking out.
So
yeah, my cats used to walk the aviary all the time. Now you say that, I forgot about that. Dana and Fox used to walk across the roof of the aviary, and it had to be because those things were in there, because once they went away, they never did it anymore. You know, it's like, hey, look, I see you, I'm gonna get you. But ours didn't worry about it. It might have just been a pure size issue. We have a 10-foot by 50-foot aviary, so that's pretty big space, and they felt, I guess, maybe more they could get away. But you can tell they're a little bit worried about Mr. Predator kind of looking down at them from, you know, 8 foot above.
Well, you know, it's good self-selection, I guess, in that, because, you know, the cat still does it, but all of the birds don't mind lived. So
yeah, that natural selection works. Have you had any issue at all with the HOA people, either because of the sound or anything?
You know, we have had issues with the HOA people for wild birds, which has been super exciting. So they didn't like that we were feeding the finches. So that was super exciting. But, you know, one of the ways to kind of deal with the HOA in general is a lot of hiding, which sounds really bad. So they are like tucked around a corner. So I'll be on the other side of the green space and you can hear them. And someone will be like, oh, you know, did you hear that bird? And, you know, you'll be like, oh yeah, I think that's a robin. And so you can kind of like plant little seeds so that they start telling other people. So that,
you know, striped-tailed foofy flew. They're an endangered species. We're really lucky to have them around here.
We're so lucky, you guys. So that's been kind of another thing, is just kind of that little psyop business working in is unfortunately part of it. You know, one of the things, we built the kids a playhouse on our property, and the HOA has been horrible about it. Says that we had to get it, you know, surveyed, had to like tear it down, like had to get a request to put it up. It's just been this whole nonsense. So yeah, anything you can do to not be involved with them is a 10. I'm joining the HOA, so I'm very excited.
Okay, yeah, insider. Yeah, I remember it was about 8-9 years ago. We had this issue here. There was this little concrete ditch up in Plano. And Plano's a very rich, Karen-oriented part of Dallas-Fort Worth. And these kids were crossing the ditch to get to walk to school. And they were little kids. They were, you know, 10-year-old kids, little kids. And this ditch was 5 foot wide, and it had, like, step stones for when water was throwing it. And the little girls just jumping across it all happened. There was no problem here to begin with. And the parents were all triggered. The kids are going to slip and fall and get hurt in the ditch and drowned in 4 inches of moving water. Which probably was only 4 inches of moving water, like in the spring when we got lots of rain. It was probably dry most of the year. And they had figured out they needed a bridge. Right? So you got about a 5 foot ditch and you got about 5 foot of slope up on an angle of concrete. So you got 15 foot to span. By the time the HOA and the local government got done saying everything that needed to be done to build this footbridge across 15 foot, it was going to cost $9 million.
I bet it would.
$9 million.
It has to be ADA accessible.
I'm like, I could go to Home Depot with $200 on a prepaid debit card and have this done in a day for free. And that's why it's things like that that give me so much animosity toward adding layers to anything we already have to deal with.
Well, and that's the issue we have. One of the reasons we bought this house, this is our first house, so that's probably why we didn't think about the part as much. But we have this great green space, and it has this little creek that runs through the back. And it's supposed to be a protected waterway. It is a creek that goes to a river. That's all it is. Like, nobody's dumping sewage, but everybody's worried that if you walk on the crabgrass,
if you look at it
out there, and you know, I think it's great. You know, we have a lot of kids in the neighborhood. Another reason we bought here. So, you know, I'll give them a mason jar. I'll be like, hey, I'll give you $5 if you fill this mason jar full of crickets. Cause it gets them to leave us alone. It gets them in there and you know, the birds like it. And it's funny to watch all the little kids try to grab crickets. Well, HOA lost their mind. We're worried that the kids were going to fall in the dry riverbed. That's a creek. And all that other nonsense. So, yeah. If anyone has an opportunity, please listen to Jack. Please don't get in an HOA.
No, no. It's not something I would have known 30 years ago. I got lucky that I never bought a place in one.
Yeah.
And then I had friends who did. And then some of the local news that came, I'm like, oh, no, no. But yeah, you take me back to when I was 24 years old buying my first house. I would have definitely considered it. And if
we are.
You know, if you had a real estate agent who convinced you that it wasn't such a bad thing, I might have bought into it. But
well, it protects your property value is what we were told.
Yeah, yeah. Protect your property value is code for make sure your children or grandchildren will never afford a house.
Well,
that's what I've determined that means.
And we're in the Portland metro area, so you know.
Yeah.
Stupid expensive for all the trouble you're getting. And
yeah. Yeah,
really
definitely. You notice the people with the most stringent rules on housing have the greatest housing crisis. It's just crazy. It's like that's how that works. It's nuts, you know. When you're doing incubation, how's that working out for you? What's your grow out look like? Kind of what's your process? And you kind of mentioned you're going to kind of maybe ramp that up in the next cycle.
Yeah, so what's been really great about that, so we went to Vivor and we got one of their big old incubators. And so we save up eggs for, you know, maybe a day or two and sit in there. And it's literally 18 days has been the longest it's taken. So they've been hatching around 17. And, you know, you just leave them in there. And then we just bought a big old bin from Home Depot, the clear ones. And we just sit it right outside with a heat lamp in the herb garden. So it's right next to the house. It's in our zone one for our permaculture, for all of our permaculture people. I'm learning about that from you. And then we just grow them out. And it's been really great. This is going to be our fourth brood. And at least what we have learned is that plastic melts when it's hot. So if you have your heat lamp, make sure to tinfoil underneath the bulb, so it doesn't melt the plastic and start a fire with the bedding for the quail in there, because that's not a cute look. Also, quail hate water, so they will spill any water you give them. So just be ready. I also learned that quail don't get giardia because all they want to do is if they do have water and they haven't spilt it, they want to poop in it or throw dirt in it.
Yep.
So we probably have been keeping our heat lamp on too long. That's something we'll change this time. But this has been our first brood that we haven't lost any chicks.
Okay.
So that's not true. We lost one to the dog. So that was our... So our daughter isn't allowed outside without the dog. And so she was checking on our chicks. So she had the bin open. And the dog's like, oh, this looks great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just picked one right out. So, but other than that, none of them have died from natural causes. So we are getting a lot better.
As good as Charlie was about not messing with the livestock when they were really little and he's like, I can eat that in one bite.
Yeah.
I think it was just like opening a box of chocolates in front of a fat guy. Like, he's going to eat a couple.
Yeah.
There's no way around it. It's going to happen.
You know, and we're lucky. I mean, not lucky, but, you know, a three-year-old has seen a lot of dead quail because of the rat adventures.
Yeah.
But our poor niece was over. So she had a big old cry. So our poor little three-year-old had to say, don't worry, quail dead. Put it in compost.
Yeah, it's a quail. It was going to get there sooner or later.
Yeah. I was just going to let the dog finish it off. But
yeah. I mean, would you say that it's probably a good idea for people to hatch more than they think they need?
Yeah. So our hatch rate is probably maybe 60%.
Okay.
Has been our best one. I'm following the directions better on this one, so I'm hoping to get up to 75%. Okay. What I realize, and maybe other people realize this, apparently you can increase the incubation rate if, like, 2 days before you actually spray the eggs with warm water to kind of increase the humidity and actually get water on the eggs. Apparently it's supposed to make the shells softer and easier for the birds to peck through. Mm. So that's something we're starting with this. We have some birds that are actually just going to hatch this weekend.
Okay.
So that's something we have started to do.
And I'm sorry, I missed that. What do you do to make the eggs shells a little softer?
Apparently you just need a little spray bottle with hot water and spray inside the incubator, like onto the eggs so the droplets can actually sit on the eggs.
Okay.
And apparently, and this is all...
Enough humidity is what it sounds like.
Nonsense, but yeah, it's supposed to, like, because the pores are getting bigger, it's supposed to help the pores kind of expand. So it's easier for them to peck through.
What is the incubator you're using?
We're using the Vivor one, and it's...
Oh, okay.
I want to say it's the 24.
Okay.
Because I want to keep a brood of about 35 to 40 at all times. And then I think the boys are just going to be my meat birds.
Okay.
Unless there's a white one or something really pretty.
Something cool, yeah.
Yeah, something cool. So all the kids like the white ones, so I kind of have to keep those.
What do you do to kind of give them this natural landscaping? You kind of mentioned like a stump or whatever, and you talked a little bit about finding the eggs, but that was something that came up all the time when I kept an aviary. You never find them, so can you just kind of go back through that again?
Yeah, so at least how we have our aviary right now is this sounds really silly, but it's kind of a little treasure chest of cool things we find on our property. So we had a really hard tree to get out, and we saved a bit of the stump so we can always look at it and say, hey, I got you. But it's nice, kind of a scenery break. The other thing that we've started to do is to give them live things to eat, because we'll pick out things from the garden. Like, we grow a ton of mint, just because I like mint, and it's pretty. It's easy to grow. So, you know, you just chop a bunch and throw it in there, and they'll eat it. What we've started doing is we've started burying mint. And, you know, who cares if it spreads? Like, please eat it. That would be for us. But we've put some mesh over the top of it because the quail will eat everything down to the ground.
Yep. So
we thought we would be so smart and so cool and so hip and, you know, plant, like, a bunch of herbs in there for them to eat. And they just killed it.
Yep.
And I was like, mother heck. So now we grow it out, and then we grow it so... Maybe, like, let's see here. Sorry. So, like, we'll have, like, our mint. And so we will grow it so the mesh starts right here. So that it's always going to be growing and always alive. And then they can just eat the tops. So that's something that has been really nice and something that they will even eat through. Another hardware cloth recommendation, because quail can get through chicken wire. And then
they can.
So
we've done that, too. We've taken basically a frame, and put a layer of hardware cloth on it. We built a couple of them,
Yeah.
And then set that over where you would plant. And when we did a lot of like black oil sunflower because we use it for so many other things.
Yeah.
And we'd let them eat it until you could tell like, okay, it's about to tap out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would just pick that one up and move it and start again. And then they would take it all the way down to the base. And
the other thing we really like to do is, you know, when we're starting to focus a lot more on like foraging. So kind of like seeing what's around. We have a lot of curly dock. And so, you know, it's all seeding right now. So what we'll do is, you know, when we're out, you know, I'll just have my little knife and I'll just kind of pick some of that, or I'll find some purslane or some dandelions. And like, we have our little basket and bring that back so that they have things to do. And so that's been really nice as far as feed. One of the other things we're going to probably start hopefully soon is we've been hearing about people sprouting feed or sprouting seeds to help cut down on like the pellets that you get from Wilco.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to help a lot too. And it really kind of, it's cheaper. So like I said, we're trying to maybe not make money on this. The idea is that we want to be able to pay for her preschool.
Okay.
The idea from it. So it's, you know, it's $500 a month. And the idea is, you know, you have a goal and then you can start to work towards that. So we're getting close. We're talking about $200 a month. Which I don't think is that bad.
You mentioned on the aviary, you're kind of at like a quail per square foot.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what does that look like? Like how many birds do you have and what is your male female ratio?
So we have 36 birds right now, including the new ones we just put in. I like to keep like a 5-to-1 unless there are a bunch of pretty roos. But 5-to-1 has been our best right now, just because there's so much room and it seems like they start to have girls that they prefer and the girls seem to prefer one guy that they like as well. And the way I judge that is by how bald my girls are. So I don't know if people know this, but the way that they mate is that they grab onto like the back of their heads and then they get on top. Sorry. And then they get on top of them. So if the girls are starting to go bald on the top, then I know there's too many guys in there. So, and then I don't ban them. I just started banning them to tell the new ones from the old ones.
Yeah.
But other than that, you can tell who the roos are, mostly just based, like you were saying, from the browns on their chest.
Yeah.
Because I'm not into venting. I'm not into looking for foam. Like, that's a little too much to it that I don't want to be.
I will tell you, the cheap way to ban them that I found is you can buy like a giant package on Amazon of like the mini zip ties in different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I use for bands instead of actual bands. So you put them on there, cut the end off as long as you know, if you wait till they're 3 or 4 weeks old when you've brooded them before they get introduced, at least anyway, then you put them on there as you're introducing them. And
no,
so,
we totally copied you. I want to let you know, I've listened to your three hour quail, like magnum opus, like 4 times.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I do on graveyard.
I did accidentally, when I was trimming them though, amputate a toe once and I felt really bad. And the damn thing didn't even react.
No.
Like I'm like, I got blood on my hand. I'm like, what? And I look and I realize I took the tip of one of his toes off. Sorry, buddy. He ended up fine. Like you said, as long as the others don't like hone in on a wound.
Right.
They're very durable animals.
Yeah, the other thing is, so we had one that we really liked. It was one of our whites that had some really pretty brown on him. She was our fault for going on vacation. And so, you know, any little change in their like day to day or something like that, it'll just kind of set them off. So they'll be grumpy or in a bad mood. So for some reason, of course, she's a different one. So she got picked on. And so they cut her eye. And so, of course, every time a quail's eye looks like it's cut, it looks like it just got pecked out. They don't.
Yeah.
Still there.
Yeah.
And so what I found is that if you do something to one of the quail that's different, you either need to change something in their environment or you need to pick out like 4 others to do the same thing too.
Oh.
I moved around their like little aviary, their, you know, where the stump was, where the basket was, and then whatever neosporin I had left, I just put it on the top of four random ones.
Getting something else to focus their energy on. Why did the stump move? Why is the box there? Why did my feeder go over here? So that they weren't fixated. I think that's what happens. They get fixated. And if you think about a bird's life, fixation, if you're in the wild and a cat wants to eat you, and a hawk wants to eat you, and a raccoon wants to eat you, fixation's an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because, hey, that's not right.
Right.
Something's up. And you've seen wild birds, when they see something ain't right, they start yelling at it and shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, but then when you put them in a cage, they can't express that, so then they take it out on something.
You know, and that's, I forgot to say the other part about kind of like the natural stuff we're trying to bring in. We grow stuff up the hardware cloth. So we have a bunch of beans going up there right now. So any of the like little bean vines that try to slip in, they get eaten. And it's something for the quail to look at. And then the other thing for next year is I think we are going to expand our quail coop. And then we're going to try to have a black soldier fly larva bin inside the quail coop.
That'll work. So we'll be happy with that.
So, because that's part of our compost waste stream that isn't getting used. As you know,
the one thing I'll say, you'll know this already, but for people listening, as you add things to an aviary, be careful of creating little pinch points, because inevitably they'll decide that's where they want to put an egg, and it'll be the spot where you reach your arm back twisted sideways and your finger just touches it and you can't quite get it. And if you use sticks or whatever to get quick, they're pretty fragile. You end up cracking them, like, because I had wicking beds in mine, and they would, the pinch point was right where they would stick an egg, and you're like, I see it. Yeah, you know, go get my grandson, stick your skinny ass arm in there. And he got a little bit bigger. I had to go get the granddaughter to do it, you know, and so just that's something to know. Like, think about creating spots you can't access. Because one thing we did that worked really well, and you made me think of it with the beans, is we had wicking beds in there, and I would plant like sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those wicking beds, and they don't really fly up on the stuff very often, but those vines would grow down and they would eat them as high as they could reach. And, you know, it takes 2 days and they grow back down, and they would feed off that with no work. And that was kind of cool that they did that.
You know, and then this is probably a bad idea. I don't know if you know about the Baker Creek. They have the spoon tomatoes that everyone hates.
Yeah.
I was thinking about growing, because I've heard of people growing the spoon tomatoes in baskets and hanging that over the aviary, but I don't know if quail can eat tomatoes.
Sure they can.
Okay.
I can't see a reason why not. I mean, there's just no reason. Let's take some Q&A from the audience here, and then we'll wrap up. We've rounded out an hour here. Jeff says, I've seen YouTube talking about A&M white meat quail. Then I called them some local breeders, and they said A&M stopped them, and I should get the breed they have. Sound a little like they get tribal. Like I said, the A&M quail, all they were is white quail. And I raised them, and I couldn't tell the meat apart. I couldn't tell the eggs apart. I couldn't tell the size apart, growth rate. They're just white birds. I don't really know that. I would go ahead and buy whatever you can get, honestly. Jeff says, what large meat quail should I get for DFW area? Cortniks, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's what they are. They're all Cortniks. It doesn't matter if they're white or gold or brown. They're just different colors. Like, what state do you live in? I know we were keeping a few things under wraps here, but
I live in Portland, Oregon. So we're ready for all of our rights. I'm a police officer as well, so we're getting ready for some overtime. So thanks, everybody.
Yeah. I think what he's trying to say is Muscovy ducks raise quail. I wouldn't try it.
So at least what I've seen in a lot of the Facebook groups, and it turned into a bit of a meme, is, you know, can you raise other things with quail? And the answer is usually no.
Yeah.
If they get stepped on, their eggs are so small.
Yeah.
That they get bullied. And I think everybody was trying to do what you were doing, is because quail aren't very broody by themselves, which is a drag. So you're trying to, like, trick other things into brooding your quail. But at least Facebook and the combined knowledge of the internet has said no, as you were yourselves.
I know people have successfully done what I tried with bantam chickens. And a bantam chicken will weigh like a hen, even a buff Orpington. They look kind of poofy, but they weigh like 3/4 of a pound. And I don't see there's any mechanical reason they couldn't sit on quail eggs. And I think they would if they didn't eat them. And I might have just had a chicken that really liked to eat stuff, or, like I said, I think it's the mottled thing of what is that. But I know people have done it. A Muscovy female, mature enough to be brooding, is going to weigh 5 to 6 pounds, and I just think that's too big a bird to sit on that fragile little egg. And I also think they're not going to understand what to do. Like, you can give them chickens, and then they, like, go out and do things with them. Quail is, you know, when they're born, they're like smaller than a golf ball. I just don't think it'll work. They're so little.
Oh, can I say one quick thing about the incubator?
Yeah.
Please learn from my mistake and take out the thing that moves the eggs before the birds hatch. So.
What did the birds get? Squish. So you mentioned Vivora, and I work with them, and I like a lot of products they make. I would steer people toward maybe a little bit higher-end incubator anyway. Really, you should stop turning eggs about 2 days before they're going to hatch on lockdown. And the ones I've recommended up till now have a program in them where if you say it's an 18-day incubation period like for quail, at 16 days you go on a lockdown, it'll automatically stop. I haven't worked with the Vivora ones, but I haven't read great things about people's opinion of them.
Okay.
So
we just got the Vivora one because you like Vivora.
Yeah. And they are inexpensive and all, but I always put out my warning with Vivora. They make some really great stuff, some okay stuff, and some crap.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I try to only recommend the stuff that I think is going to be really good for people. Question, are BSFL larvae too big for quail? No, they'll eat them. They're happy to eat them.
They love them. And, you know, we've had, and this is going to sound crazy, but while we were having our rat problem, we also had we had mice. And we had a couple mice get in there, and I saw the quail kill and eat the mice. Mm. It took, you know, four of them to do it. But, you know, for some reason, the mice thought they would have a better shot in there than the cats, with the cats outside. So they ran in there and got ate.
Oh, they will. Birds are vicious critters, man. I think people, because, you know, Disney and all, and the little bird lands on the princess's hand, man, birds are vicious. My rooster right now is chasing ducks and geese away when they get too close to his hens. And so you got he's a big rooster. He's about 10 pounds, but these geese are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And they're scared of him because he's just madder than they are. So, yeah, I've seen ducks eat mice whole. I mean, I've seen a duck grab a mouse, flip it upside down, and swallow it like a little dinosaur, you know. So, they'll do it.
Sorry, I forgot to mention, that was another reason we chose quail is because we could have fertilized eggs. Something we couldn't have with chickens. So
yeah, because you get.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it's nice to be able to have your own fertilized eggs.
And every way I've read to prevent roosters from crowing is not something I'm willing to do to a chicken.
Yeah,
it's just Lee Padit Chardin says, "How many quail are you raising right now?"
Yeah, we have 13. We have 28 right now, and then hopefully we'll get at least another 20. For the ones that'll brood, and then we'll pick out the ones we want for the winter because our quail are going to lay through the winter because of the supplemental lighting.
How are you selling your eggs, and what are you kind of charging for them?
So I didn't know this, but Facebook won't let you sell eggs. So that's been super fun. So bummed. So I've been doing it mostly Craigslist and word of mouth. We have a large Asian community here and they love quail eggs. So that's really fun. And then the way I've kind of found a way to go around Facebook not letting you make listings for eggs or for meat is you can have a page set up. So I just set up a page and I'm still kind of figuring out how to use Facebook. And then you can make posts about selling them.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how you can kind of get around it.
Can you make a post that says you sell quail? Live birds, because people are smart.
Yeah, and that way it's not a listing that they're actually looking through.
Yeah, we have a quail farm. We sell quail. For more information, go to, what did you call your farm? Four foot or something?
That's how big our property is. It's 42 feet long.
42 foot farm. I like it. I think it's a good little niche way to hit, like, what's closer to home than 42 foot. I mean,
and then as far as the selling, we sell a dozen for $8.
Okay. And that's very profitable. They're extremely efficient feed converters. And one of the things you'll find is that people that want them will pay for them. My duck eggs have been the same way for us. Like, you get outside of chicken, because everybody's got chickens. Everybody's got chickens. Their mother's got chickens. Their brother's got chickens. But you go into quail, geese, ducks, guineas, turkeys, like, people that want them will pay for them. And we've never had anybody complain about it. We've had people go, okay, that's all we've gotten when people have asked the prize. So last question from Jeff is, what about basil? I don't know. I've never seen anything eat basil but people.
I've never tried it. You know, we have a ton of basil, and I will let you know next year I'm going to plant a ton more. We did all of our stuff by seeds this year. Yeah. No, the basil goes into pesto, and then the pesto goes into the kids' gullets. Like, that's what we use our basil for. I hate to waste it, is where I get so stuck.
Yeah.
So, if, you know, we have something that grows just all the time that's almost like a weed is going to be like our dandelions, anything we find out on the road, mint, you know, stuff that I can give away. That's what I'd want to feed them, because I almost consider them like extra compost makers.
Yep.
So.
Anyone from golf got one in under the radar here. What temps is she dealing with in the winter? What's kind of your low temperature threshold?
We are a maritime climate. So, you know, we maybe get to like 32 and then we will have drops. I think we got down to like 7 degrees. We had this really weird freeze that never happens.
Yeah.
They were super fine. Apparently quail can go down to like 0 to -20 degrees.
If they're mature and they're dry and they have a place they can get out of the elements.
So what we did is we just took some like plastic wrap and just put it around the quail aviary. We didn't do any metal heat. We said, you know, good luck. I'll make sure your water doesn't freeze. But
see, that's why I like those little bins upside down.
Yeah.
They generate a ton of heat. I was kind of surprised. One of the guys I mentioned earlier, he brought me some chicks. I think he had like 6 in a box. And when I stuck my hand in there, it felt like there was a heater in there. And it was kind of cold out. I'm like, did you put like a heat pad? He's like, no, that's just what they throw heat. So if you give them something to, like that they can get inside of, they can warm themselves up a great deal.
No, I'll definitely do that next year. And I've heard that about bees as well.
Yeah.
Because we're doing a greenhouse this winter. And our idea was to do the actual beehive in the greenhouse. To try to warm up the greenhouse.
Yeah, when I used to keep bees, I had a really, really cold day. It was well below freezing. And I'm like, well, you know, they don't do anything when it's frozen. So it'd be a good time to just see how they're doing. No safety equipment or whatever. Pulled the top off and popped off the interior top. Back? No. They were all happy and, you know, like, what are you doing? No. Back in you go. You know, they unless it's a snake or a lizard, it makes its own heat. Anyway, this has been cool. I really appreciate you being here today. I've got a link from you for your Facebook group. If you have anything else you want to add to the show notes, just pop it over to me by email.
Okay.
And I'll get that added before I put the audio version up. But, Heather, it's been fun. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for your community. We're here because of you, Jack. You're a jerk. So.
I love hearing that. Thanks so much for being with us today, Heather.
Grace, have a great day. Thank you.
Bye now. All right, folks, real quick, let me wrap up. I want to thank Heather for being with us today. I think it was a great interview. It is something that definitely is probably one of the easiest ways you can produce protein for yourself in the form of meat and eggs. So definitely something to consider. And they're really easy to take care of in the end. You will, when you start doing anything for the first time, like Heather talked about, you're going to make some mistakes, but you'll rectify them and you'll find that they are, I'm not going to say the easiest livestock, but they're like just below chickens in that. Chickens to me are the easy button, chickens and ducks. And then these are just a little bit more. And it's only because you do have to put some form of confinement around them. And that's about the only thing that makes them any harder. They're just as tough, other than they're small. Anyway, with that, before we wrap up, let's go ahead and remind you guys, if you like the show and you want to support the work that we do, one of the ways you can do that is doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day got nothing to do with quail other than I guess maybe you could use it to like blend up some eggs or something, but it's a 4-in-1 immersion blender. I first found this thing when Dark and I started making a lot of squash soup, and a gal named Sandy taught us how to make this really amazing butternut squash soup. And then I started growing the giant Italian Tremolino squashes that basically are a giant butternut if you let them fully mature. And we started making it for the workshops. And when you're not making like a half a gallon. When you're making like 4 or 5 gallons of scalding hot soup at a go, and you're having to dump it into a blender and process it and put it back into another pot, you get to the point where you don't want to do that anymore. So I found an immersion blender, and when I was looking for a good one, I found this 4-in-1, and usually stuff like that is kind of gimmicky and all, and I was like, you know, they're like $28, and one without all the extra stuff is like $24, so I'll try it. And it was totally worth it, and I'll tell you that I really don't use all of the 4-in-1. There is a little like egg whisk in there, and that's kind of useful once in a rare moon for me, but it's mostly immersion blender. But the motor of the blender goes on to this mini food processor. I use that all the freaking time. Whenever I'm doing something, I want to chop some stuff up, and it's enough that I don't want to do it with a knife, but it's not enough that it makes sense to get out the big old Cuisinart. I use this for making salsas and picos, and if I'm doing sausage and I need to macerate a bunch of peppers or something like that, and again, it's just not enough to bring out an 11-cup Cuisinart, I use this thing. Takes a couple seconds to clean. It's really self-clean. Throw some hot water in it and run it. And it's just great. So it's basically, to me, it's two products in one. The other stuff, if you like it, you can read up on it. But they're on sale today for like $26. And they're just a great product. And you can find it at tspaz.com or just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and start scrolling down and you shall find it along with all our other great stuff. With that, I want to thank Heather again for being with us. I want to thank y'all for tuning in this week. It's another good week of shows. I think we kind of hit 2 urban topics this week. It wasn't really designed that way. It just worked out where yesterday I talked about urban ditch fishing, and today we talked about raising quail, which to me are the ultimate urban livestock. And real quick here at the end, I agree with Heather's approach, which is why I did it myself. Raising quail in an aviary or coop and run style, tractor, anything like that is a better way to go. I wouldn't tell somebody that can't do it not to do a rack system, though. That works, too. You just have to adapt to that. Brad Davies, who's the person that turned me on to this over 10 years ago now, he was producing something like 2,500 cold birds a year and something like 20,000 eggs with a double stack system in a one-car garage in Detroit, right in the middle of a neighborhood. So that tells you there's a lot of ways to come at this, and I think it's one of those, something that we just don't appreciate in this country right now because life's pretty easy, even though it's kind of tough compared to 10 years ago. But the ability to produce a top quality protein like this, protein and fat, you know, when you start talking about the eggs and everything else, and they will eat a lot of things that people don't think of. They don't have to be fed feed from, you know, the feed store or what have you. But even when you're feeding them feed, it's really inexpensive relative to the output. There's a market for the eggs. This is one of those things, if you live in that compact property, you want to feed yourself better, it's a really good thing to look at. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show for the week, and we'll have a flashback, and we'll do it all again starting next week. You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you'll never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.